WEEI Afternoons in our Brighton studio. Ted Johnson joining the fun. What's up, Ted?
What's up, guys? How we doing?
How you feeling?
I'm feeling all right.
Yeah, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
We had a long day yesterday. We were down at Foxborough, then we were at Fenway. Did you recover last night? Did you get off your feet, hydrate, do those things?
I did. I did all those things, man. I was there. I was a little late for our meeting this morning, but I got there.
It's okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. No, I'm doing good, buddy. Thank you for the concern.
By the way, getting to that meeting today, we had a wonderful time over at Dana-Farber in anticipation of the Jimmy Fontelle-a-thon here, the 18th and the 19th. I got to tell you, whenever your device of choice and your mapping system, Waze, Google Maps, whatever, tells you like, oh, don't worry about it, it's going to be a 25-minute ride, and you start planning on that, don't believe it.
Oh, yeah, no. Recalculating.
No.
For, changing.
25
traffic
turned
is
into
building ahead.
Exactly. 25 turned into 45, and I did not have dump truck breaking down on Storrow Drive on my Boston traffic bingo.
Yep.
That said, yesterday was a day and a half.
It was a little bit.
We had, like you said, boots on the ground, full joint practice, and a rewarding one at that, followed by 4 hours at Fenway with a great talk with the manager. Big day. And then tomorrow, Dean College stage, Patriot Place, afternoon show, come by, see your boys, 2 to 6, Brady statue, come on now. We're getting it.
What a week. What a week and what an hour. It's 3 o'clock. Dan Ball's time for the three-point stance.
Green 19!
Brady!
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as 1, 2, 3.
Pastrnak, a hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A three-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman, Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or you have to try to commute in Boston in the morning, God bless you, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, three hosts, each of which will present their stances on the biggest stories in the world of sports today. Our order, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson. Andy, Alita off, you get 60 seconds for your opening stance. Are you ready?
I am.
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
It's no secret. I love the sport of football. Chose it as a career. Have been watching it, talking it, writing it, doing TV about it for quarter of a century. And it just kind of snuck up on me from yesterday that football's here, baby. We were down at joint practices. The Washington Commanders were on the field. Mike Vrabel scrapping, getting bloodied. I'm seeing Jaden Daniels and Drake May shoot it out. Tonight, we have three preseason games. Colts, Ravens, Bengals, Eagles, Raiders, Seahawks, Patriots tomorrow. College football camps are underway. We're hearing about news of Shador's going to start. We got news everywhere. Pete Carroll's doing this. He's pinning guys. I love this time of year. College football right around the corner. High school football will be reporting soon. It snuck up on me. I don't know how we got here. I love the summer, and I can't believe it's over because when football season starts, summer is over. But the other reality is, moving forward, we have football to watch and talk about and enjoy every flipping week through February. And as my former high school coach used to say, great day for football, men. It's always a great day for. He used to say that, and it would be sleeting, snowing, raining, whatever it was, 130 degrees. He'd run out that door from the locker room and say, great day for football, men. And that's how I feel about it. And ladies, if you're listening out there and love football, I'll include you in the old school saying.
Great day for football, you people.
Yeah, great day for football, you people.
Yeah.
Am I the only one that feels this? Like, oh, my God, football's here. Like, football.
No, I'm excited about I'm currently at the in-between because I still have a little bit of the melancholy that comes with, oh, the kids are home all summer. This is great. Ah, S word. They're going back to school soon. That means they're not. Things aren't as fun. Oh, but football is here. Oh, but the weather is going to change. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's mid to late August becomes a real roller coaster because summer's over. But football, where are the kids?
But in a way, it's the best time of year, like for me, because everything comes together. Your kids are still home. I got some football to talk about. And then you get into September, and maybe your kids go to school, so maybe you have a little extra free time on your hands. But the weather's still nice, so you can still go outside and do things. But there's still football on Sundays. It all comes together. You got, like, Labor Day cookouts and all of that. It's kind of the best time of the year right now. Football season, fall season, coming up on back to school season.
Had my first Oktoberfest beer last night.
That's a little early. Early August.
I admit to the fall.
Halloween candy out already? Or was somebody going to tell me that?
Halloween candy out? It's been out for 6 weeks.
Oh, that's the part I don't like. But at least it's football season.
I'm still firmly in the summer ale family myself.
No, I cheated. I walked by. There was a packed beer fridge with like 10 different local Oktoberfests. And the only reason why I bought one was because I thought, well, it's going to be fresh.
Right.
So it's going to taste good.
Oh, yeah, very true.
But I feel like I cheated on summer. I apologize.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Also,
get a little taste of it. Makes you value the rest of summer more, maybe.
What a nice perspective, Dan Ball. Thank you.
I'd try. Go ahead, Andy. I do need
to check in on Stiz.
Rain on it.
Stiz, because we have a question that you've been putting off that we need to answer soon. And we're going to get a little bit more information. We got a couple weeks more to deal with this. But who is going to win more football games this year? Mike Vrabel's Patriots or Bill Belichick's North Carolina Tar Heels? And I don't know how many weeks you need to build up to have a confident answer on that, because I think you're starting to waver a little bit on both teams, if we're being honest. I think you're wavering on both teams. But we're not doing it today. But remember, that question has to be answered before either team kicks off a real game. Who's winning more football games this year, the Tar Heels or the Patriots?
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
By that, we're going to find where his loyalties lie.
Absolutely.
Boston, Chelsea, New Englanders, listeners, we're going to find where Stiz's loyalties lie. And I'm a little bit worried about where that is. That's all I'm going to say.
Bill Belichick has done it again.
Maybe what? a quick teaser, quick little palate cleanser for that one. Okay, football season is here. Andy with the bold take to begin us here on the 3-point stance.
You people are never happy.
I'm just kidding.
When I say the O-line's more atrocious than it was a year ago, you're like, idiot.
He
doesn't speak for us. He's not part of this show. And then when I say, woohoo, it's football season, bold take, Andy. Why don't you maybe say something less cool?
Okay, A, I was kidding, and
I'm sensitive today.
B, if you watch the clip where you went viral, I was the first one to talk in that because I was agreeing with you. Maybe it was more out of fear than anything else, but we'll leave that one there. Fitzy, are you ready for your 3-point stance?
That was a whole lot going on right there.
Yeah. Are you ready to take over?
Yeah, why not?
All right, here's 60 seconds for you. Go ahead.
All right, don't worry, everybody. I'm not going to make it a cheerleader section for the Braintree Little League team that is taking on Bedford, New Hampshire tonight for the right to represent New England at the Little League World Series in Williamsport, but go Womps. Let's do it, boys. I'm actually going to talk about a little conversation I had before today's show. I had the pleasure of being a guest on Mark Schlereth's podcast, The Stinkin' Truth, and we got down to some of the fundamentals of the Patriots' upcoming season, because, Andy, I'm not sure if you've heard, but it's football season and football is here. So we addressed three particular topics. He's very confident Mike Vrabel won. Number two, he really believes Drake May will take the next step this season because of Josh McDaniels. But the third one I thought was very, very interesting. I asked Mark Schlereth if he thought that Will Campbell could anchor the turnaround of the Patriots offensive line and if he was the answer. And we will have the audio to share on this very show very soon. But I wanted to let everybody know that I was then treated to a 10-minute football guy sermon on why short arms don't matter, why a strong base is the biggest thing. Everyone who thinks that arm length and little nuances that combine warriors talk about can tuck it and suck it. He said, you know what? If you wanted to build a team full of people that bench press 225 pounds and 40-yard dashes, you'd have a team of failures. Football is easy for football players. Football is hard for athletes. Pats Nation, one of the best offensive linemen of the last 25 years, wants you to know we got a keeper in Will Campbell. I'm on board. Let's go.
I think Ted has thoughts.
Ted, you want to share your thoughts?
I wanted to chum the waters for Ted. Come on. He probably crashed into Schlereth so many times.
So Schlereth, where does he live? Denver? He's seen this guy at all these practices? He's seen the one-on-ones?
Well, he does Fox now. So,
okay. You know. I just, you know, so just because Mark Schlereth says his arm length doesn't matter, we should just stop debating it.
That's it.
How's Will Campbell looked in training camp so far?
Up and down. Mediocre. He's had his pros and cons.
Well, mediocre connotates that it's that you know he's doing an okay job. Like he's had highs and lows, but shouldn't
look. I think
I just want to ask: should rookies have highs and lows?
I think we should just because Mark Schlereth said he's going to be a great player that we should all just say he's going to be. Look, I think it's too early to tell, but if a guy with his length of arms has never made a Pro Bowl, never made an All Pro team, then it stands within reason to think that he might not work out at tackle.
Of course.
Because no tackle has ever had arms his short, his length, and made either the Pro Bowl or the All-Pro team.
Yes.
So he'd be the first to do it.
Well, they always have to have a first.
Sure.
He might be the Neil Armstrong of short arm left tackles.
So when you're debating it, you have to keep it in that frame of mind.
So I think, let me allow this then. Let me sort of reframe my 3-point stance if I can vulture 20 seconds. It was assuring, or at least confidence building, to hear from a former offensive lineman that the tape that he's watching him play in person, that he believes that this guy has what it takes to succeed and not just be a flame out that either goes to guard or is a bust of a first round pick.
Defensive end, what he thinks, or an outside linebacker. Guys,
because he talked about
linebackers.
I'll do this all day.
Linemen stick for linemen. Yep. Linebackers stick up for linebackers. So a lineman's not going to say anything bad about another lineman. Ask guys that go against short arm tackles and then get their perspective.
Is his whole Mark Schlereth's whole thing again? Can't wait to share the audio with you, but when his whole thing was bringing guys into him as opposed to trying to keep guys, maybe that's a technique thing, and he's that kind of player coming from the Alex Gibbs Shanahan offense, you know. Maybe that thing. It's just, Andy, would you be not excited, but do you at least sort of like put a little something, some stock in hearing from a former offensive lineman? Hey, I'm not worried about little measurables or combine intrinsics. I want to see what his football acumen is, and I want to see what his, you know, the trunk, the base, the things that guys like that really care about.
Yeah, I mean, I take all the information. You know me. I try to take all the information, and then I poo-poo some of it if I feel
your initials are AH, but people call you AI for a reason.
Or I believe everything, and I question everything. You know, that's another way to say it. Like, does Mark Schlereth, does he have experience as an NFL offensive lineman? Sure. That's great. Does he bring that knowledge to his viewing of Will Campbell? I, like Ted, don't know how much Mark Schlereth has watched Will Campbell. Don't know how much he's seen from here. Is there a bias? Yes. I always assume. It's one of the problems I have that so many quarterbacks are color commentators, and the quarterback is so important. And I think a lot of quarterbacks kind of make excuses for quarterbacks when they're doing games. And it's like, okay, I mean, you're a quarterback, so I guess you're in the fraternity, and you want to make sure they always keep you in the fraternity or whatever.
Don't the good ones criticize?
I don't know how many quarterbacks you see are overly critical of the quarterback.
I think it's
that
Troy Aikman
doing.
And
he's gotten old and whatever. So no, is it good for the argument of the pro Campbell side that if some lineman is like, yeah, he's good enough to do it? Okay, sure, that's fine. I do think Ted is right. You know, if Willie McGinnis came out and said, I think Will Campbell's awesome, and this is the reason why, and arm length is overrated. I always heard that, but I never bought it. I went up against this guy who had short arm, blah, blah, blah. There'd be value in that, too. There would be absolutely value in that, too. So the biggest answer to all of this is we're just going to have to wait and see.
I'd rather hear from Dietrich Wise, who wins him in one-on-ones, than I would Mark Schlereth, to be perfectly honest with you. That's just my feeling on that.
But even there, I always think current NFL players aren't going to necessarily rip another player.
No, they don't.
You know, because half the coaches tell them, like, talk about yourself and nobody else. You let me talk about the other players or things of that nature. So, but this is going to be an ongoing debate. It's going to be an ongoing debate until the performance tells us and then where they play them.
We're going to know a whole lot.
If they move
him
to guard in November, then
that's
we're done here.
Yeah. That's all,
folks. We can all put it away and go home.
Andy, don't you think we'll know so much more after September?
No, I will not be willing to.
I didn't say have enough information to render a verdict or make a final decision. Like, he's a bust, he's a stud, move him to guard, this guy's toast. But just watching the gauntlet of games he has to go through.
We'll have more
his
information.
His first month is going to tell us a lot.
Yeah. I mean, some of it. I believe Max Crosby is actually a right side of offense guy.
No, he'll get more Malcolm Kuntz than he'll get.
Yeah,
don't be surprised if they move him around.
There's going to be information forthcoming, but we're a ways away from, you know, my classic example is always Devin McCourty, All-Pro rookie cornerback, and I'm like, wow, this guy's going to be great, and he sucked the next year, and he had to get moved to safety by year three. Like, things can
Why did he fall off a cornerback cliff?
He sucked.
Well, there had to be a better reason than that.
I don't know if anybody knew the reason. It was like all of a sudden, Joe Flacco's picking on him. He's like, oh, McCourty's out here throwing deep to that side. And he just, year one, he looked fluid. He was on the guy's hip. He would put his hand up, and you're like, oh, my God, this guy's a blanket. He's going to be so good.
Thank God we didn't get Dez Bryant, and then next thing you know.
It was nuts. But that is a, you know, cautionary tale that September, you need more information. 1 year in, you still need more information. Yes, we will be talking about Will Campbell for a while.
That would certainly be the case. And if you missed it, Will Campbell, good, according to Mark Schlereth. Devin McCourty sucks, according to Andy Hart.
Can I read one text real quick
always
that I think Ted will react to interestingly?
Go right ahead.
The top text, Ted, right now on the text line, 781 says, have you guys ever heard of Bruce Armstrong?
Yes.
I feel like you've probably heard of him. Have you seen him? Have you showered with him? Like, I mean, I feel like you know who Bruce Armstrong is.
The hard-hitting question.
All those Travion things. Henderson's country?
Like, yes. I don't really get the point of the question of the text. I just, when people throw stuff out.
That's all the question was?
Did he have short arms?
You ever heard of Bruce Armstrong?
Was that a notorious issue with him?
Bruce Armstrong does not have short arms.
And he was a good tackle.
Yeah,
I have no idea. Okay. I just know I've definitely heard of him and seen him play, and Ted has shared a locker room and more with him.
Okay, let that one sit there.
I was going to say,
we're suggesting. No, I'm not suggesting. I'm telling the world that you know who Bruce Armstrong is.
Yeah, I knew.
You have
that,
knowledge of tackles that have played 10 years ago,
20
years ago.
I don't know anything about him outside of the realm of football, so I don't know where you're going with that. All right, I'm going to ask a question before I go, all right?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
All of you, did you have an issue with the trade deadline activity, or were you okay with it?
I didn't love it.
Okay, you didn't love it.
Issue,
and what about you, Dan?
Big issue, yeah, for sure.
So big issue. Okay. All right, interesting. All right, I'm ready.
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
All right, so last night you see Dustin May, who they picked up in a trade before the trade deadline, pitched 6 hits, a 3 ERA, only 3 2/3 innings. And then Jordan Hicks, another player that they traded for earlier in the season in the Rafael Devers trade, he goes out there, pitches 1 inning, gives up 3 hits, 3 earned runs. You know what? The people that, because the show poll, I believe, was very positive about the trade deadline. People that feel like didn't have that many issues with it. If you didn't have an issue with the trade deadline, I don't want to hear any complaining about how last night's game unfolded. I don't want to hear that you know they should have done more. No. You can't retroactively go back and now all of a sudden have an issue with the trade deadline. And this is what Lou Maloney pointed out to us. And this is what's going to be interesting is, after the way they lost last night's game, you just wonder, is this going to be there's going to be an unraveling? Are they going to be was it a one-off? Are they going to get back? Because Lou did say, if they do start losing and start losing multiple games, they will start using the trade deadline as an excuse. They've won 6 out of their first 6 games that they played out of the trade deadline. They've lost their 7th one. I'm curious to see how they play from here on, and if they use the trade deadline. Do I start hearing people use the trade deadline as an excuse for why they are losing? That will be something to see. But it is interesting. The way they lost last night is specifically the position that the people were wanting them to get at the trade deadline that they were unable to get.
That's exactly – wow. I mean, I think we are actually in lockstep and unanimity on this one, because that's all I could think of last night listening to and watching the end of that game, Ted, was all the things that this team needed that dogged this team coming off of the win streak, post-All-Star break, heading into the trade deadline, reared their ugly heads last night. Jordan Hicks couldn't find the strike zone last night with Waze, Google Maps, or a Sherpa. And then Dustin May was exactly what we thought he was going to be, a discarded starter from a competitor in the National League who's had 7 surgeries and has never lived up to his potential from his early baseball days. There was no power hitter to come in when Jaron Duran was finding gloves and Roman Anthony was hitting it to inadvertently the wrong part of the ballpark, even if it had good pop on it. Like, you needed a little jolt from someone else last night. It was nowhere to be found. And so, while I do not think that Captain Salmon Coat and the rest of the Red Sox organization signing Roman Anthony to the extension yesterday was a distraction or a bright, shiny object over here, I do believe that there's a chance that this is going to be a pain in their ass and a thorn in their side the remainder of the way, as good as they've played recently.
Well, you just hope that Jordan Hicks and Dustin May aren't two guys. I mean, I feel like both of those guys are here because it's almost like they had to get somebody back in the Rafi Devers. They really just wanted to unload Rafi and not have to pay him. But we got to get something back, right?
Yep.
So you get back Jordan Hicks, and you see how that's gone. You know, hey, Dustin May, he wasn't our first, second, third, fourth, or 10th choice.
Yep.
But at the end, when we ran out of time and we couldn't get a Joe Ryan deal done, we had to get somebody, and that's who they got. And both of them just, you know, pooped the bed last night.
And then they fly to San Diego, off day today, 9:40 tomorrow night. How are you feeling about Walker Buehler versus Skippy Pavetta out in San Diego? Walker Buehler has not been great for this team.
Let's go, Buehler.
But he's had a good July. He did have a good, better July than we anticipated.
That went from good to better very quickly and more accurate.
Better by his standards, good overall.
Do you feel great about him taking the mound?
I feel like Pivetta versus Bueller is a pretty fair draw.
Oh, I don't. I think it's an absolute blowout in the Padres' favor.
Wow.
I think Pivetta's had a great year.
No, this is good. Last time he said Criswell was going to crap the bed, look what happened.
I just remember the beginning stages.
Oh, I was dead wrong on that.
Pivetta.
Yeah. Mr. Ball.
We live in the same building. Interesting guy.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Pivetta?
Yeah. You'd have more fun hanging out with that chair sitting next to you.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So then where did the O? So maybe the nickname
where
was ironic.
Where did Skippy come from?
Was it ironic?
I have no idea.
So he's not like skipping around, lots of energy?
No. Definitely the opposite.
Yeah. Did you like it?
Boo.
Okay. Do you like that chair right there? I'm indifferent to it.
I mean, it does the job if I sit on it.
You talk about paranoid, that guy. Oof.
Yeah.
Paranoid. Well, I didn't like him. Remember when he went, was that 2 years ago now? 3 years ago? He went to the bullpen in the middle of the season, and he flipped out.
He's like a little high strung.
Yeah,
he yells a lot coming off the mound. Remember, he would yell a lot of histrionics.
Yeah.
But he's the better pitcher tomorrow.
An athlete. Yeah.
It is interesting that the Red Sox had to go against an old pal last night, and Waka, who had been dialed in his previous start, got the best of him. Will this be like a will Skippy be so high strung and wound up tomorrow night, Ted, that he over pitches and the Red Sox take advantage of it? Or does he end up having the start of a lifetime, leaving us to say, hey, how come we couldn't get guys like that at the deadline?
Or does it all just work out in this weird thing where Bueller stinks, Jaron Duran strikes out 4 times, should have traded him to the Padres, Xander Bogaerts hits a 3-run home run, and Pivetta pitches 8 scoreless, and you're like,
I said I would like to sleep this weekend.
617-779-7937. You can react to our 3-point stances. That was a volatile one.
Zesty.
Yeah, a little Will Campbell. I feel like this is going to be an ongoing issue that we deal with, and the man up next may have an opinion on it. Tom E. Curran will join us here in his normal Thursday 3:30 slot on WEEI Afternoons. We'll ask him about the camp so far for Will Campbell and what he thinks about this ongoing debate about the offensive line. Tom E. Curran here with WEEI Afternoons up next. But first, Dan Ball, what's trending? WEEI Afternoons, Thursday off day between joint practices and the preseason opener between the Commanders and Patriots, Gillette Stadium, on Friday night. Of course, the big news of the night actually might take place before the game. Tom Brady's statue will be unveiled in a ceremony in the plaza outside the Team Hall of Fame at 6 o'clock. TB12 will be in the plaza, talking about the statue. And I look forward to measuring up to the Tom Brady statue. They say it's 12 feet. That's a big statue. And if that's on top of a podium, like a, not a, I don't know what you call that.
Stanchion
or something. That's going to be way up in the air. That's going to be kind of
12 feet is not small. That's a large statue.
That's what I mean. And that plaza, that's going to be pretty cool. That's going to overlook everything. But joining us on the phone lines here now on WEEI Afternoons is Tom Curran from NBC Sports Boston. Tom is brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining. At drainsbyjames.com, at Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Tom Curran, it's not present Patriot related, but I was just mentioning it, so I wanted to ask you. They're going to unveil the Tom Brady statue tomorrow night, 12 feet tall. Do you think we're eventually going to see a Belichick and then a Kraft? Will they all be together? What are your thoughts on statue expansion in the future down there at Patriot Place?
That's interesting. I hadn't given any thought. I'm going to need to ruminate on that more extensively. I mean, as I was just leaving there, doing a little work there today for NBC Sports Boston, I mentioned that, you know, last year was the Hall of Fame induction. This year it's a statue. What will it be next year that they can extract from Brady? A shard of his tooth. We're going to have it embedded in somewhere in a goalpost, and everybody come back. So, I'm sure that they will always find a way to leverage the marketing people, Will, the glory days.
Ruminate, great word. hey, Tom, let's. I saw you at yesterday's practice, and I just want to get your thoughts on really the story of the season, and that's what Drake May looked like. I thought he looked pretty good. Some nice little boots, and I thought he had a scramble touchdown run for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Just what did you think about his performance in yesterday's practice? And then what, just further on, what are you seeing different in his game this year that maybe you didn't see in it last year?
It's a great question. It's the kind of thing that you and I would have exchanged ideas on during the season as we watched the game. And I would mention to you, Ted, this really looks like McDaniels is having an impact on him because there are so many easy throws for him. It's not that different personnel-wise. So, I mean, what have you added? Kyle Williams and who else the wide receiver room? Diggs, he was out there for a fair amount, but it's the same guy. So why are guys more open and running free, and why does Drake look that much more comfortable? Certainly the offensive line is helping, but I really think yesterday was the best demonstration that we got of May in a McDaniels offense as opposed to the final year that he had at North Carolina, the year with Alex Van Pelt where it was going to be stripped back down to zero and have him run a West Coast version, and we're going to show him how to paint by numbers, step back, and throw to the places he's supposed to throw. I think it shows and showed yesterday what a nice fit May's style is for McDaniels' offense, and we're probably seeing, what, Ted, 15% of what the Patriots' offense, yep, maybe more, of what it'll actually be by the time the season starts.
Tom, were you as pleasantly surprised with the overall product and execution yesterday? I feel like those of us that were in attendance, be they fans hanging off the ramps or those of us on a very crowded media hill, were treated to the best-looking football team, albeit again in just a joint practice, but the best-looking version of the Patriots we may have seen in a while.
Yeah, probably the last time I saw them look that good was 2021 against the Giants, which didn't turn out to be a good team, but they just hammered the Giants during the joint practice. That was the Joe Judge year and Daniel Jones's year, and that was Mac's first year, but they looked terrific that day. So a lot more situational driving the football stuff that week, and maybe they'll do some of that in Minnesota, but it's been since then that they've looked good, because if we roll through it, 2022 was Patricia and Judge running the offense. 2023 was O'Brien with a horrendous offensive line and receiver core, and last year was an embarrassing offensive line and a host of new coaches. So it has been a long time since you just saw competency after competency and didn't see plays where you go, well, I don't know exactly what went wrong on that offensive play, but it might have been four different things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Tom, what did you make of the two scuffles, fights, whatever you want to call them? I know Drake May was asked about it and kind of alluded to them being a good thing and the energy. I didn't see anybody ejected. And we've had fights over the years, you know, under Belichick. Sometimes guys were ejected, sometimes they weren't. Just sort of, was that a good thing for where this team is at and what they're trying to prove, or how did you react to those?
I don't mind fights in the least if they are organic and if they happen in the heat of competition and it doesn't turn into somebody saying, well, I got to make a name for myself on this team and start a fight. I've always thought that was hokey. And it even goes back to Belichick paying off. Who the hell was it, Ted, back in the day?
Yeah, I heard rumors that it was,
sliding 200 to somebody to start a fight. With Lawyer Malloy. And so it was organic yesterday. I don't think that they were out there trying to start fight after fight. And we've been to enough training camp practices. And, of course, that has taken part in enough where you do see teams who are like, especially against the Patriots when they were good, well, we're not going to take any crap. And we're going to show them we're going to stand up to them and all that crap. I think yesterday was organic. I thought it was a clean practice. There was one minor scuffle. And then there was the larger scuffle. And I thought that what Vrabel did wasn't the kind of thing that was orchestrated to send a message to his team about having their backs. He weighs 260. He's the biggest. He's bigger than both the guys who were fighting. He said, all right, I'm going to get in there and try to break this up, and that was the cost of doing business. Now, there's very few men on the planet, never mind on NFL sidelines, who could say, oh, I can fix this, but it shows you how involved he is.
All right, Tom, two-part question, one of my favorites. And first is just, how did you think Will...
two parts.
How do you think Will Campbell did yesterday against different competition? And what would you? How would you feel if the starting left tackle and left guard are both rookies? Because reportedly, Jared Wilson, it looks like he's in the driver's seat to maybe start at left guard next to Will Campbell.
I'd give Campbell a B+. Just the absence of chaos and capable rep after capable rep. To me, there was some stuff later on. Phil Perry observed it a little bit more than I did because I thought that he was kind of shut down. He said, well, they sent They sent two at him a couple times late and did some stunts. And the only time I saw him beat, I thought that it was a corner gut wide and around him. But other than that, in his very brief one-on-ones, I think there were only two reps that he took in one-on-ones because there were so many guys. And also in the 11-on-11, it was uneventful. So I'm giving him a B+, and that's just grading hard. And then I wouldn't have a problem with it, but I would acknowledge, and again, this is something you could speak to, Ted, if you saw two rookies lined up next to each other,
feast.
You'd feast, but it would be interesting to you, wouldn't it, if those guys started picking up things left and right.
Yep.
And two guys who are extremely intelligent guys, just to talk to them, you can tell that they're sharp as hell.
Tom.
Jared Wilson, I mean.
Yes.
Just to throw in the name. Yes.
Yep, of course. So we've talked about him a lot on the show. I know Patriots fans, at least from what I can glean from social media, are pretty hype on his potential as well. And the Pats were too, because they took him early in the second round. Ted has even gone so far out on this show to say the Patriots' most impactful offensive player this year, or weapon, will be Travion Henderson. Have you been impressed with him to date in camp with that extra speed? And do you think he's going to be, will he be a rookie running back in the McDaniel system, or will he potentially be featured and become a star?
No, I don't think that they have the luxury to play apprentice year with anybody that talented. You know, you could do it with Shane Vereen or James White and give them time, or Stephen Ridley. And Bill was still doing it later on with receivers like DeMario Douglas or Booty, who probably should have been getting time on the field given the level of talent that they had. No, Travion Henderson needs to be on the field, and I think he will be on the field extensively. I think DeMario Douglas will be the hub around whom the offense revolves, just because of the position he plays and his usefulness. But to me, Henderson does a lot of things that you're going to like. And to have three complementary backs back there is really interesting. He had a terrific practice earlier this week. He missed a very tough catch yesterday, catchable ball directly over his head from May, who could not have thrown it any better, but it was just degree of difficulty. And I know that you were watching that play. Probably degree of difficulty was like an 8.
Oh, yeah.
It was a hard catch to make. He didn't make it. But he was there. It's just he's nasty.
Tom, are you starting to get a feel for maybe some interesting names that could be fighting for roster spots? We've talked about guys like Anfernee Jennings or Kyle Duggar. What's his role? So maybe those two guys or even other guys that you think would sort of fit that category at this point?
I would say that, I mean, Duggar just carries such a massive cap hit to me that if you're not contributing, and you're the second highest paid player on the team, and contributing is relative. He might be doing a million things that the coaching staff could say, well, he's doing that, and you can't tell because you don't know what the defense is. Okay, fair. But to me, if you're looking at a surprise cut, it would continue to be Duggar, but he's just a professional, and he's athletic, and he does play special teams. So I keep bringing him up, but in my heart of hearts, I'd hate to see it happen because I think he's a good player, and you'd like to see it work out. And then I really think that Kendrick Bourne is getting into deeper and deeper water in terms of trying to make the team. I mean, I think that Booty is far past him now, and I think Baker might be pulling up neck and neck with him.
Hey, Tom, I'm curious what you thought. When I saw Jason Tatum walk in yesterday to practice, I was like, it just feels different around here. I mean, it was buzzy before Jason got there, but, you know, you got Jon Bon Jovi there, ex-Patriots were there. It just felt the crowd was as big as any that I'd seen in a while. Did it feel different yesterday at practice, just kind of the whole vibe, and maybe there's just a little bit of different emphasis and kind of, you know, just people are looking at this team a little differently than they have in the last few years?
Yeah, I think the excitement is much higher, and I think it's, you know, and it's tough, but had Jerod Mayo come back this year, you would not feel the same sense of optimism by any stretch. They might have had a hard time getting the Stephon Diggs. They might have had a hard time attracting any free agents, never mind Milton Williams or other players like that. So to me, what the fans wanted was change from Bill. Not necessarily to Jerod, but the change from Bill went to Jerod, and then it needed to be changed from Jerod, and then it's changed to Mike Vrabel, who many people thought to be like an antidote. And he has done nothing since he started, Ted, as the head coach, to disabuse anybody of the idea that he could walk it and talk it the way that you hoped. So I think it really was a reward for the people who have thought that it would be a much better team, because the product on the field was so easily consumable. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It was easy to digest. You know, oh, God, this is gross at all.
All right, Tom, last one. Keep it quick. Mike Vrabel has talked recently about how important he is to the defense overall. And yesterday we got a great sample of Christian Barmore dominating in that one-on-one. You like what you see so far? And do you think we may be getting back to the guy who was so great at the end of 2023?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think he said to the Barstool podcast was in earlier this week that he looked at Drake May and Christian Barmore as the keys in some ways to the season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm paraphrasing, but is that exactly what he said?
Yep.
Yeah, so that shows you the importance, because the ripple effect that Barmore can have on everybody is significant, and that includes Milton Williams. Milton Williams is a good player, but I would imagine that Christian Barmore is probably stronger and has the potential to be even more explosive and dynamic than Milton Williams. The two of them together should be excellent. What I want to see is more of a pass rush impact, and I didn't see it yesterday. That's the only downside I'm looking at and perceiving is I want to see a difficult-to-deal-with pass rush that has to emerge.
Tom, as we let you go, what are you expecting tomorrow night in terms of Drake May and starter reps? Any inclination there?
I haven't really pinned it down yet. I'm saving that bullet for tomorrow.
Ooh.
To find out, but I would imagine that given the fact that this is a fan base who is yearning for some things to be rewarded for after some down years, it would be a miss by the Patriots organization and Vrabel in particular if he didn't give him two series of Drake May. Mm-hmm. So the kids could say, I saw Drake May. It ain't hard. It's not hard. Handoffs, a couple of slants, get him out of there.
All right, Tom, enjoy the game, enjoy the statue, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks, bye.
See you, buddy.
Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, here with us on WEEI Afternoons. We will react to a couple things he said, including some optimism on the offensive line. He took the young offensive line on the left side a little bit different direction than Ted Johnson did. We'll talk about it next here on WEEI Afternoons. Ted Johnson looking to feast.
If you're playing a team that has two rookie linemen side by side,
yep.
We are highlighting it. We are circling it. We're saying that we're going to run 2-3-man stunts over here. We're going to run overload blitzes over here. We're going to fake like we're blitzed and drop out. We're going to make life very confusing for those two rookies. Two rookies playing on either side of your offensive line is a risk. I mean, I'm not saying it can't be done. It can, but the teams do it. It's just something that your opponent is going to highlight, notice, and try to exploit. That's all.
But does this now not, I mean, as if we needed further reminder, does this potentially not speak to just how bad the O-line development and drafting has been the last couple of seasons?
You know, or it speaks to how good the rookies are. So yeah, it can go. It can go either way.
Absolutely,
it can go either way.
It's a positive spin.
They could become the Red Sox, where you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Do we have the core of the offensive line for the next 8 years?
Myron Anthony over there.
Jared Wilson. I haven't heard one bad thing about him. And the times I've watched, I have noticed whatever he has this low base. Like, so he's very, it's wide and it's low and it's hard to really move him. So that, I mean, the kid looks like he's going to be a good player.
And Josh Kraft just chose him as his running mate.
What?
Just no.
Also, a little side story with Jared Wilson. I believe he only played 1 year at Georgia.
Okay.
And I was talking to my buddy Paul Perillo about that, and he did some research, reconnaissance, and apparently one of the coaches had made a comment about the year before he could have started. Their two best linemen were centers, I guess. And they're like, well, if we play both of them and then one of them gets hurt playing guard, then we don't have a backup center. So I'm not sure I agree with the logic of not putting necessarily your best five offensive linemen out there. But mm-hmm. there was sort of a method to the madness of why he's relatively inexperienced. Mm-hmm. It's not because he wasn't good enough to play. It's because they just had a different idea in mind what was best for the Georgia offensive line.
Unless we forget last week when Morgan Moses was kind enough to give us a few minutes, he said after watching Jared Wilson on the field, he pulled him aside and said, how many games did you start at Georgia? And told him 12. And he said, get out of here.
He's better than his baseball card, to steal the Will Middlebrooks line. Well, you know, it's what it says he's done. His physical tools are better. And I told you, I had heard from inside the building that they love big L, big O, big V, big E, his athleticism.
Like Stidham style love?
No, I think they actually love him. He's actually going to play for them.
Okay.
But I am with Ted. I'm always, and this is in general, you know this, skeptical. Two rookies out there.
Yeah.
You said it earlier, Fitzy. Could the Raiders say, well, yeah, Max Crosby usually plays the left side, but you're going to start two rookies over there? We might move Max Crosby to the right side, and you might get to meet the highest motor player in football on day one.
That'd be smart. But
I would.
If he's never played that side.
Right.
But, and you know what was interesting last week? Layton Robinson, who's only in his second year, but still, nonetheless, he's not a rookie. He couldn't say nicer things about Jared Wilson. He just thought he was blown away by his leadership, but his football acumen as well. So there's obviously something going on with that kid. My guess is it feels like a foregone conclusion. He'll be the left guard, and it sounds like he's not gonna embarrass himself. He's gonna be pretty much more than serviceable playing left guard.
And even I am optimistic that those two guys are gonna be playing offensive line for the Patriots for a while. I just don't know where. I've talked about maybe you need to shift them to the right one spot when you find if Campbell doesn't work out, and if maybe Jared Wilson's better long term as a center, maybe they're forced to play out further than they are.
Yep.
But you're right. The sort of the football makeup of them, it sounds like everybody loves everything about them, the work ethic, the intelligence, all of these things. The only question is, do they have the physical tools to play the two spots they're currently in? But if that's the best you can put out there, I mean, we've heard for how many years now? I mean, Mayo said, we got to put our best five out there. If these two rookies are part of your best five, am I not going to put them out there because I don't want to put two rookies?
Put them out there.
Right. If they're the two best players, will there be some hiccups? Sure. There'll probably be some veterans like Ted Johnson and Willie McGinnis that'll run some games and maybe make them look bad. They might only do it once, though, because if they're as smart and as good as everybody, and I think this is what Tom was alluding to, fool me once kind of thing, and then, oh, I see what you guys did there. We're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe next time.
I guarantee you, they run overload blitzes, two-man games, three-man twists to those guys' side every day, all day, so that when they get to the game, they're just sitting there going, they're waiting for it. They're anticipating it because they've been repped in practice time and time again.
And that's the other thing. If this front seven is as good as everybody wants to believe it is, with Christian Barmore and Milton Williams and Harold Landry and all these guys, well, they can do that in practice over the next few weeks and try to prepare those guys for those opportunities that they might face against the Raiders in that first part of the season. All right, coming up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we're going to continue to talk a little football. We were down there yesterday, all three of us. We have some more reactions, but we need to answer a question that is being posed by some in the media out there. Is this a soft training camp for Mike Vrabel? Has the hardo gone soft in Foxborough? That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.